Hey folks, if you're in Austin and you're looking for some live music in the live music capital of the world, look no further than 2014-2015 Austin Chronicle Music Poll winner for Best Club to Play, Best Sounding Venue, and Best Venue. That's Strange Brew Loungeside. Simply go to strangebrewloungeside.com, look on their calendar, and find out what's going on. From the Glenn Miller Orchestra to Jimmy Dale Gilmore to Renfro to today's guest Billy Harvey, they're all playing there. Go to Strange Brew Loungeside for yourself to see what Austin's Best Venue has to offer. StrangeBrewLoungeside.com. All right, let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? Here, host, I'm Howdy.
When we talk.
All right, hello. I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I have a fantastic show for you guys. Billy Harvey is here for the third time. And you wonder, like, how do these people keep on coming back when they do stuff? Well, Billy Harvey is a special exception. Not only does he have a new album out, but, I mean, the guy is in movies like Strings. He made a documentary about a tour that he did called Everywhere Now. He's constantly putting out great albums, Bear Sick, Pie, Grow Garden Grow, The Everlasting War. So many great albums. He wrote a poetry book, The Day the Orienteer Saw Me Seeing Things. The guy is just constantly doing stuff, and now he has a brand new record called Dear Danger, which he's been working on for a long time. He set out to make an amazing album, and he made what is so far my favorite album of the year, without exception. This album is absolutely fantastic. Billy Harvey is an amazing artist, and he's here in town. He's about to head out on tour with Patty Griffin. For a little while, but this record, Dear Danger, comes out everywhere this Friday, July 10th, 2015, but if you live in Austin, you can pick it up at Waterloo. It is available now, right now. It's been available now for like a week. He's going to be doing a release show at Strange Brew on July 31st, and he's going to be doing an in-store at Waterloo that same day. So July 31st, he will be at Strange Brew doing a release show. Until then, he will be on tour with Patty Griffin, opening for Mavis Staples. How amazing is that? The dude's always doing stuff that is amazing, and he's always inspiring to be around, and I actually got to jam with him a little bit at a show that I played at the Townsend. I brought him up on stage for a few songs. That was fantastic. It's just always inspiring to hang out with Billy and talk to him. He's also one of the funniest people I know. He makes hilarious videos, which you can see on his Facebook page or on his website, billyharvey.com. So we will be talking to Billy Harvey. Before we get to that, let me tell you what's going on with me. I had a pretty busy week. As I said, I jammed with Billy. I played on Thursday at the opening of this new bar, The Townsend, which my friend Steven owns, and my friend Kathy Valentine is co-owner. She also played with the Blue Bonnets, and we also played together and have rechristened our band, and we're rededicating ourselves to the lady band that I have. It's called Lady Band Johnson. That's our new name. So we rechristened our band, and then the next night I played guitar with Amy Edwards, which I told you guys I've been rehearsing for. It's been great. I had a great time playing with her, and then again, the Blue Bonnets played, and we got to play some more songs as Lady Band Johnson. Great weekend. I also played with William Harris Graham on Sunday night at the Continental Club Gallery, along with Noel Hampton and this guy named Nathan Hamilton, who I finally got to meet. I've never met him, seen him around town, you know, heard his music, heard people talk about him before. They all say great things about him, but this dude was a great songwriter. Noel was great, and of course, William Harris Graham, fantastic artist and just a crazy guitar player. And I'll be talking to him later this week. His band, The Painted Red Starts, has a new album coming out, so stay tuned for that. So yeah, it's been a crazy weekend, man. 4th of July came and went. I didn't really participate in 4th of July. I just kind of chilled out the whole day. I wasn't feeling great. I was pretty exhausted, honestly, from the couple of nights before, because it was just a lot of music I had to know and learn. They were very stimulating and exciting shows. I'd never played with Amy before on Friday. She was really great, man. Yates, her drummer, really helped out. I really liked hanging out with them. We just had a great time. It was a great, great weekend. So there you go. I guess we should sit down and talk to Billy Harvey, who's about to head out on tour with Patty Griffin for a little while before he comes back and starts promoting his new record, which is absolutely brilliant, called Dear Danger. I tell you, you gotta get this record. If you are not in Austin, wait until Friday, July 10th. Get on the iTunes, get on the internet and get this album as soon as you can, okay? And Billy's a fantastic artist. He's a great producer. He's produced Charlie Mars, Salim Nirala, Bob Schneider, just to name a few. And yeah, fantastic guy, fantastic artist. We always have great conversations. So sit down. This is Billy's third time on the show. And here you go. My conversation with my dear friend, Billy Harvey. Let's get down.
Trap, good for nothing, good for a laugh. I'm calling, I'm not calling, I'm lost for words, I'm zipped up tight. I'm sleeping, I'm not sleeping, I'm dreaming, I'm up all night.
Oh my god, those credits are so small.
Yeah, so, okay, let's talk about this vision thing. When did you notice yours going?
The first person I noticed that was a friend of mine with readers was Steve Poltz, and it was a bunch of years ago, and he had a couple readers hanging around on his t-shirt, and I don't know, for some reason I took note of that. I was like, oh, that's so weird, he's got a couple glasses hanging from his shirt.
Yeah.
And I've always heard that when the minute you turn whatever it is, 42
right.
or 46 or something like that, not that I'm that old.
Right, of course not.
Actually, but that it just goes. It's like clicking a switch. And sure enough, and you see the sign by how, and you resist it because you need them exactly at that age. And then you resist it for as long as your arm is.
Yeah.
Because by the time your arm's fully extended,
you're looking
like,
at your phone in my kitchen.
Yeah.
It was like, you could have, if you were a primate, you would have been happier.
Yes.
Like, because your arms would have been long enough.
That would have been great. If I could have taped the phone to your chest and just stepped back a few steps, I could have read it perfectly.
I have the exact moment that I noticed.
You do?
Yeah. It was on a date.
Whoa.
And I was at the movies at the Alamo Drafthouse, and I got the bill at the end of the thing. And I was like, I mean, there was no,
yeah,
I could not see so I just kind of like put three 20s down.
Oh my god.
And then she brought back one of the 20s and some change.
Oh my god.
Yeah, like I had no idea.
Round down, man, don't round up.
Well, I was scared of them. Plus, you don't want to look like a chump on a date,
right? Totally.
Like, have the girl come up and go like, you didn't give me enough money.
Oh my god.
So and then it was, there was a, I mean, I just did this in April. So I've spent since the summer of 2012 until just this past April with this horrible secret.
Wow.
Yeah. I was driving home from a gig late night, and I was having a really hard time seeing. So I don't only need readers, but I also have like one of my eyes can't see far.
Uh-huh.
At night.
Do you wear a patch to strengthen it?
No.
Do you wear a patch on the other eye?
No, but I've heard about these doctors now. They're like, hey, we'll put one contact for your readers in one eye and one long distance with, and your eyes will just deal with it.
That
we'll
seems
see.
Freaky. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds insane.
They'll LASIK your eyes. They'll laser beam one eyeball so that it can see close.
That's true.
I don't.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah.
That is
weird. What magnification are you at?
I'm at a low magnification. Like, I bought a pair of readers just at Walgreens and I had to get just the 1.0.
Oh, yeah. You're a spring
still
chicken.
In the zone, yeah. But you wore glasses before, right? Did you grow up wearing glasses?
No, I didn't. For a while, my vision's been really good, but I, at one point, it wasn't blurry. And I don't think it had to do with my vision. I think it had to do with my mind, for real. So I went and got my eyes checked, and they're like, well, you have astigmatism, which is that one word or is that a stigmatism?
I think it's called a stigmatism.
Is that one word?
I think it's stigmatism. I don't know.
All growing up, I thought a coma was A C O M A. He's in a coma. But so they're like, you have something wrong with your eyes, but basically, you know, you don't need these. And I'm like, well, I feel like I see better when they're on. So mostly it was like vanity frames because I really didn't need them. But now I do need them, I think, overall. I went and got my eyes checked once. Maybe I was a little more sane, but I wanted my vanity prescription updated because I'm sure they were deteriorating. And they're like, the dude's like, he's like, what are you doing in here? You have pilot vision. Your vision is 30/20.
That's the best.
It's like, yeah, you can see at 30 feet what other people see at 20.
Wow.
So, but now I can't see anything within a 6-foot radius. So that doesn't help me for most things.
Well, the thing that hit me with the eyes was that I knew that you hit an age and you can't see. And then I started thinking like, oh, other shit. This is the thing. You were talking about Louis C.K. He's like, when you get to our age, you feel the best. You will not feel better than you know what I mean? Like, you'll never feel as good as you felt physically when you were in your 20s, even though you didn't realize it then.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Like, each day you're not going to feel as good as you did the day before.
Yeah, when you get up from a table and you make a sound, there's problems. Like, oh my god.
So, Billy, your album Dear Danger.
Dear Danger.
It's out.
This
will come out on Tuesday when it comes out. And this this is an absolutely gorgeous album. Like, you really outdid yourself. Is that your karate trophy?
It is.
That is awesome.
I won that in I think it was 1978. It's third place. I want a first place and a second place before, but I feel like if I display those, it intimidates my house guests. So I like to display a third place.
Right. Yeah. I have a football trophy that a friend of mine has that I need to get back, but it's just a trophy that says my name and my number.
Uh-huh.
John Gowdy, number 32. I don't think we even were ranking. I think that was when they started just giving...
That's an acknowledgement of having being present. He didn't do anything but show up to get the trophy.
I went to the practices.
Oh, yeah.
And I played, in a couple of games.
Oh, that's cool.
I wasn't the star football player you might think I was.
Did you kick? Were you a kicker?
No, actually, I was a safety and a tight end.
Nice. Yeah. Not that I know what those are, but they sound like good jobs.
A tight end is kind of a wide receiver.
Mm. Kicking a football is hard.
Yeah, it's hard. Okay, so making albums is hard. You were here last year.
Yeah.
You were like, I don't know.
Oh, last year I was making this record. Yeah.
And you were like, I don't know. I got this kick. So I don't know. You didn't know if it was going to come out or not, or what you were going to do, or what the hell. And you were kind of confused.
Yeah, it was one thing I learned, and I said this last year, I think, is that I took too long between records, and it wasn't by choice. I'm moving and life's changing and whatever. Sometimes you just have to put it down.
Right.
I was writing the whole time, so I had way too many songs and no records. So the pressure became high. Like, I wanted it to be the greatest record ever made, and that sucks to be creating from that place.
Yeah, it's not good.
So then, when I did the Kickstarter, I just came up with a sum of money that I thought would help me make my dream record. I raised a little bit more than that, and then the pressure to make good on all the supporters was so high. So that added to I need to make a record that cures cancer and also elevates the lives of everyone who's ever said my name.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's just hard. So I spent I spent a lot of time trying to get rid of that, those things, get those out of my mind, exercise those. And then I don't know, making records is hard. There's just something that's
hard.
You can't explain. Why was it so hard? I don't know, but it I always say whatever it takes to get to the end result you want, and I feel like I got there, but
you really did. Yeah. I mean, this is your best album, and so far my favorite album of the year.
Awesome.
Like by far. This is you make these albums, like all of your albums are really great, but I feel like your songs take me places.
Uh-huh.
And like the song Party House.
Uh-huh.
Like there's so much that I remember exactly of that. When I was a kid.
That's so good.
Except
to
we
hear.
Didn't have Oak Ridge Boys records.
Oak Ridge Boys, yeah.
Yeah. But you know, it took me back to a time. Like a time I think that Trish and Darren had that probably hear this song and know that guy in the kitchen smoking weed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They can see the dude.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
That's amazing.
Thank you.
Was that when you, that's obviously a true.
That's true. Yeah. That's like word for word true. Yeah.
Do you think like when we were kids that I was talking to Darren about this and when we were kids, there was like this freedom. Like, I know I got on the back of my Uncle Chuck's motorcycle in just a pair of shorts to go get more beer
right.
at some point. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was like there was an innocence to it.
Totally.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do you feel like that is...
Gone.
Were you scared when you were with your sister at all in those situations? Like when you were with your sister, did you ever feel unsafe? I mean, I did in those situations, like, oh, these guys are a little creepy.
I never did. My sister has a better memory than I do. And, you know, obviously, you know, to not be naive, because I'll be the first person to look at the sunshiny side of something.
Yeah.
Dangerous things have been happening throughout time.
Yeah.
And but I do have a fond nostalgia and recollection of and for that time, and it did feel like the golden days, years, and I felt safe, and that song it's kind of for me it's a celebration of that. Like my mother feels a little convicted by it, you know, and I'm like, no, Mom, it's like that was. You were younger than I am now.
Right.
You know?
Right.
You were
way
younger than I am raising kids and having fun. Like, it's great. You want that. You want music in your house. And, you know, I didn't feel endangered, you know?
Good. Because to me, I think that that era and that sort of like, almost like we were raised like rock and roll kids. Almost like it creates cool kids.
Yeah.
I think. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It creates groovy, creative, weird people.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, times change, and there's certain things, you know, again, like this thing is going to be like about getting older, but I don't want it to be, but that's just it's what you talk about when you are, you know, and the things that I remember are like there's things that I miss and for good or bad. Drinking from a hose in your front lawn. Like,
the
how
taste,
great
the smell
was
of
that?
That water when it first comes out of the hose.
Playing outside, playing in the street, having to come in when the street light goes on.
Uh-huh.
What, you know, things like that I mean, no one will, you know, God forbid you drink from a hose, much less your own tap.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
What happened, you know? But things change, and there's always good and bad in the change, and, you know,
also dogs. They weren't on leashes.
Oh yeah,
nobody used a little baggie.
I don't remember
dogs
people
just
picking
ran around.
The dog poop up.
Yeah, dogs just ran around. Remember, there was always like some asshole dog in your neighborhood that was like you'd go inside when he came down the street.
Yeah,
some weird German Shepherd or something.
I think the dogs might be the aliens. They put one over on us. It's like we're gonna get all these humans to clean up our feces with their hands.
They're going to put little bags on their hands and pick up feces.
Yeah, you remember the lawn with just like 100 piles of dog shit?
Yeah.
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 It's just good for the lawn.
The guy that had, in my grandma's neighborhood in Houston, they had the crazy guy on the corner that hated everyone's dogs and lined electrical, you know, that electrical metal wire around all of his trees so the dogs couldn't go in his thing. And he would say he was going to shoot them if he saw them. I'm going to take a picture of you.
Oh, good.
So just from the first song right off the bat,
yeah,
Crossing the Desert, that is like an amazing poem.
Thank you.
I mean, just beautiful.
Thank you.
You really, like, I sound like my aunt when she says this to me. Uh-huh. You really, I can't tell, you really take me places with your writing. You really
Thank
do.
You. Well, I appreciate that.
Do you, take me through, like, I know you played a lot of the instruments on the record, right? You played drums on a few songs?
There's a couple I played drums on. My goal this time out was to not play all the instruments. I wanted to play with people, and so most of the record is live performances with a band, and I'm singing and playing, and everyone's playing, and
oh, that's great.
And what we did is what you hear. There's some manipulation at times, but a lot of it is just, you know, off the floor, and that's what I was looking for. But a couple songs I recorded in Santa Fe at my friend's studio there, and Party House is one of them. So I was there. Our friend Lars Goransson flew there and helped me recorded me there, and it's Guilty All the Time we did there too. So on those ones, since there were Taylor, the guy who runs the studio out there, is a keyboard player, so he played a keyboard, but I did the other stuff, you know, just because no one was around. But
the Wurlitzer, is that,
well,
who did that
on Party House?
There's a lot of Wurlitzer.
There's a lot of Wurlitzer. I did most of the Wurlitzer.
You have an amazing feel, and also the sound of that Wurlitzer is gorgeous, man.
Probably the ones that are the best is probably David Boyle. Like on All For You, that's David Boyle, and it is amazing. And
yeah, there was some, you know how there's things between guys like us and Dave Boyle, kind of.
Yeah, there's like I was reminiscing with a friend how. What you said about winning best keyboard player in Austin 1 year, and feeling like such a dick to go up there and walk past Ian McClagan.
Oh God, standing in line behind him. What is
to
horrible?
Pick up
and he
best
laughed
keyboard
at me.
Player. Yeah, yeah, oh yeah. My God.
Yeah, well, he's that guy. They have that thing where they can do that. You know, they have that weird feel. That's Well, anyway,
I did play. One of the things that I wanted to do on this record is keep the instrument palette very narrow. Mm-hmm. So my desire was to have the acoustic, the vocal and acoustic be the spine of the song, mm-hmm. and the focus, and then to have bass drums and whirly mostly, and that's it.
Right.
Very little electric guitar, very little background vocals. And I did a decent job at sticking to that. It's hard when you can do anything you want pretty much. But it kept a focus. So
sometimes it's easier though if you give yourself parameters, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You just go like, "Hey, this is it."
Yeah.
No more than just this stuff right here.
Yeah.
What's going on there? Yeah.
It's pretty neat. Yeah. So, yeah.
So, take me through, because when I was listening today when I was running, I was thinking to myself, like when you sit down and write a song, uh-huh. so I know that you write and record a lot at the same time.
Yeah.
How take me through like a song that, like, your lyrics are so good. They're not like, I'm a very, like, what came out to me is what's honest. And even if it sounds weird, then that's, mm-hmm. I stay with it. Mm-hmm. But do you craft and stick around and like come back and work on, like, how do you write a song?
I try to write a lot, because I observe the theory that if you're pursuing an artistic craft, you if you're lucky, you channel the inspiration, like the you
create the muse. You summon it.
Yeah, or yeah. I don't even think you summon it. I think when it wants to, I like to get in the way of its flow. So if I'm writing a lot, there's more opportunity for me to be in the way of, to be in the river when it washes past me.
Right.
And the only reason, and one of the main reasons that I think that is because I want everything I do to be great, and it's not. You know, so when it is, I'm like, well, it's not it. I took part in it, but something else is happening that makes this great. Because if it was my choice, they would all be great. You know,
yeah.
So I try to write a lot, and that hones your skill, your craft, whatever.
Yeah.
This is a long answer to a question, but you said take me through the your writing process,
yeah.
and I guess I said that to say this: when I am writing, the best stuff comes quickly. So my process is: I have an idea, any idea, and it could be even a bad idea, but I just sit down and I start. Usually, the lyric, melody, and music all come at the same time. It's like a package.
Mm-hmm.
For me, lyrics are the hardest. So if I'm going, I worry more about the lyrics, or you know, I focus more, concern myself more with the lyric than the music, because melodies are easier to come up with. But when the lyrics are flowing, I just keep writing, and I don't try to make it be anything. And a lot of times, I don't know what I'm writing, and till the end of the song, and till the last line's delivered. Then I'm like, oh, it's about that.
Yeah.
And sometimes in doing it that way, I have to go back and sculpt it a bit to make it clearer for the listener, or more, you know, powerful in a certain section. But usually I don't mess with what comes out the first time. And Party House, for instance, I think I wrote all that whole song. Crossing the Desert was for sure a stream of consciousness, just one. I don't even know if I crossed a line out on the page. It was just nonstop. But
you're an asshole.
But yeah, you know, it's like it took me 10 years, but whatever. But the Party House was. I had the title first, and then I had an idea of what I wanted to write. So that was a conscious decision to, capture that time period. But it came out pretty quickly, and I'm like this. If a line goes by and it's not that good, I don't stifle myself with trying to make every line the definitive line. Just keep going. And sometimes you realize that. The not so good line makes the one after it better,
Some lines are just set up lines.
Just get the whole, just get the whole thing out. So that was mostly written, but it was incomplete. Like it needed, I didn't have the third verse. And if I thank the band, then I thank the class. I wrote that in the studio right before we recorded it.
Okay.
And I had been thinking about it for a week. I'm like, I need a verse, and I have like ideas, but I'm not sure.
Right.
So that was an instance where I could, you know, maybe exercise my craft without the muse.
Yeah.
But mostly I'm just like, you know, help me out here.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, I mean, when you do that much, it's like, you know, it's like running. You can't just wake up one day and go run 5 miles if you haven't run. But if you run every day, it, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Reading helps. Reading.
Yeah.
I haven't been reading a lot lately, and that's bumming me out. But I feel like it's affecting my ability to have a story in my head. You know, it's like input output, you know.
Yeah.
So I need to be putting some more stories and words into my head. So
yeah, and they work different than movies. You know, there's something about the poetry of language.
Yeah.
when you have that space to say things.
Yeah.
You don't really get that in movies.
I know.
You know?
Do you ever do this? It cracks me up because I do. Where you're reading a book and a line inspires you, so you have to put it down and like stare at a tree.
Yeah. It's funny that what you said about that you just keep on letting it flow, because a lot of my lately, even roadblocks that I run into, if I look at pages where I've written lyrics, there's like five lines and then just a ton of stuff crossed out, and then I didn't finish the song.
Yeah.
You know, I gotta learn how to do that.
Yeah.
Let go and just keep on going.
Yeah. It's hard. Mostly if I don't finish a song, it never gets finished.
Right.
Because other ones come. Right. I mean,
yeah.
I'm sure you have the same thing. You got a journal and a recorder full of one verse and a chorus where you're mumbling.
Yeah.
You know, it's like if it's either getting finished or it's going to, you know, be in the shoebox.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes those come back and they're great ideas. You know what's funny?
I keep them. I go through them and I think I'm going to, you know,
I had some nice success for a little song this year. That last year I came up with this verse and we were in Houston playing, and you know, Kyle Crushem?
Yes.
He's a skyrocket. He's a great guy.
Yeah.
To bounce shit off of, because he will literally say like, man, that is terrible. You know, and he's really fucking honest, and I love that. And so I play him this idea that I have in this verse, and I have lyrics and everything. It's fucking real cool. And he's like, oh, you gotta find another way to play that, man. I was like, why? He's like, that just sounds like a Johnny Gowdy song. Like, and not like in the best way possible. It just sounds like you're regurgitating something. And I was like, wow. So I had that verse and like another verse. Never did anything with it, but it was always on my phone. And I was writing songs with Kimmy Rhodes for her new album. And she was like, I want to write a song that's like a real kind of Johnny Gowdy song. And I was like, I've got the best idea.
Wow.
And the song's on her record. So that's
Holy cow. That's awesome.
Wow. His criticism helped me out.
Nice.
Yeah. And also then it ended up somewhere. So that was a nice feeling.
Yeah.
So you're going on tour with Patty Griffin?
I've been playing in her band
for a while,
which is like the luckiest guy ever for that. I've done two things. I did a tour with her, and then we did one small like trip to like two gig trip or three gig trip. So this will be the second like tour that I've done with her.
Is this like a full band tour?
It is. Yeah. She has David Polkingham playing guitar. And do you know him?
Yeah.
I love him. He's incredible. He's so awesome. And Craig Ross playing baritone guitar, and he's got a stomp, like a stomp box and a tambourine that he plays with his foot, and and he's got all his pedals, and he's so masterful at that. And so that baritone guitar covers like bass and like keyboardy swirliness with his pedals, and you know, Patty's doing her thing, and then I'm kind of filling in the back. I'm playing some drums and some piano and like keyboard.
Oh, wow.
Mandolin, no guitar, just those things, which it scares me, but it's also like a little boy's dream.
Yeah.
To get to play with that caliber of people and just switch instruments and stuff.
Yeah, you are that caliber of people, dude.
Thank you.
Don't make me hit you on my podcast. Don't make me bitch slap you while you're talking to me.
I'm glad these mics are like 6 feet apart because I can see you.
Yeah.
I see you coming, Johnny Gowdy.
I'm not just a blob in front of you.
If we were sitting across a table, you could slap me. I wouldn't even see it coming.
Yeah.
Without my readers.
Well, you can always borrow mine.
Yeah.
How long is this tour?
You're playing
the Paramount, right? Here?
I don't know. She has gigs. I only know what I've been told in small increments. And this one thing is we're playing a tour with Mavis Staples.
Wow.
I'm pretty excited about, because she's just legendary, and she, you know, she can make you cry when you don't want to cry.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
And so we have 3 weeks with her. And,
wow.
And that's that for this. If there's something else, you know, I don't know.
When you guys are getting ready, are you guys in rehearsing right now?
We start in a couple days. Yeah.
Okay. Are you kind of inventing what you're doing? Like, do you guys just get together and sort of like mess around with the songs, and you kind of figure if you're going to play drums or piano, or are there parts you've already? I have
good direction from Craig on a lot of it, and some of it's obvious. You know, you hear the song and go, "Oh, this is what I'm supposed to be doing." It's kind of written in. But Patty, sometimes, if you're playing, sometimes you want to do it a little different, or you want to hear it a little different. So sometimes, I'll switch instruments, but I'm there to serve and I'm happy, the drums are fun for me. Drums are just fun to play.
Yeah.
But I play a lot of the B3 sound, padding behind them, and piano's getting more fun. It's so, you know, it's all terrifying to me.
Yeah.
To do that in public, like doing it in the studio is one thing.
Yeah.
But to do it in public, and
you know, we did a wedding with Skyrocket, and we did Songbird as the first dance.
Uh-huh.
But it was just me playing piano and Trish singing.
Uh-huh.
And my hands were shaking.
Oh.
My hands were shaking.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Because it's someone's first dance.
I know.
I mean, it's weirder than, like, a regular gig, because you're like, I could fucking, like, ruin their moment.
Their memory.
That they're going to have forever. Or...
Way to make their first dance about you, Johnny.
It's terrible to say, but it really is in those situations.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hope they're thinking about me as much as I am.
I know. Okay. So,
boy, that keyboard player, he's really nailing this Songbird.
And conversely, you're like, I'm making their moment because I'm not messing up. Like, this is their best moment because I'm so good right now. I just played a wedding.
And?
2 weeks ago, so I can fully relate. Remember that rock and roll hair band I was in?
Yeah, Flame.
Two of the dudes live in North Carolina, and they're in this highly successful wedding band, you know? And, out of the blue, the drummer's like, hey, what you doing? You know, you want to, so I flew down to North Carolina, charted 60 songs.
Jesus Christ.
And went down there, and I was nervous as hell. And the first dance, I have that exact thing. The first dance, they're like, we want, you know, you got that gamut of songs from like, you know, Dock of the Bay, Get It On, this kind of thing to like Living on a Prayer, Inner Sandman, you know.
You played Inner Sandman at a wedding?
Summer of 69. Yeah, because the groom liked Metallica.
That is awesome.
So, But she wanted these two Sinatra songs, and I'm like, that is so far out of my wheelhouse. But
I've had to learn that shit too.
But we pulled it off, I was thinking that exact thing. We're gonna ruin their first dance. Like, we're gonna clam this up or play it too slow or something. But it was fun. It was beautiful.
It is fun.
Seeing those people with so much joy, just celebrating, and that's the one place where I love. Sometimes when you're playing and you're just the backing track for the people to talk.
I love
it,
that.
It can bug you, but in this situation, no, I was like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's cool because in the cover band situation, you're not trying to have your voice heard.
Right.
You're just basically providing a service.
Yeah.
They're not coming there to see you. You're there to create help make their party move a little more.
Yeah.
And it's definitely two different mindsets.
Yeah.
But there is something about playing a wedding that I don't think I've ever even talked about on here, because people really look down on, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's people, you know, like, oh, what are you, a wedding singer?
Yeah.
You know? Like, no, I'm a wedding keyboard player. but first of all, like, looking at it this way, it's not your tunes. So that sort of like, are people going to like me? Are they going to understand what I'm trying to say? Or, you know,
right.
That's gone.
Yeah.
Having to get people to your show.
Yeah.
And if you're going to get paid, if the people don't show up, that's gone. So, yeah. And so there's like a lot of anxiety just lifted from it.
Totally.
And you're there and you realize that it's the best day of someone's life.
Yeah.
And they're having a great time and you're helping them have a great time.
Yeah.
And then you make a lot of money compared to what you make when you're going
totally.
Out and trying to get people to come to your shows and listen to you.
Right. It's, I mean, I actually was telling them about you guys because because I know you guys and how good you are, and I attribute that to the fact that you all do that artist thing. You all make your own records. You've made your own records. Like, it's not kind of like Weekend Warrior cover band stuff. It's like, I don't know. There's something more real, even though you're playing cover songs. There's an authenticity to it, and I felt. You know, because I'm sitting here with, you know, almost my whole rock band from when I was 18. And I'm like, we're a rock band here playing this wedding, you know, except we're playing It's Getting Hot in Here and Don't Stop Believing, you know.
Right.
So it was fun to play some Journey, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. That's a song that got me a little bit because that thing's so long. It's so long. It's just you forever.
Yeah.
Did how about get a little cramp in here?
Yeah. I had to do that.
Paul English has to do it in Skyrocket.
I can't do it. I'm like, dudes, I know it, but I can't play it. So I'm going to just go slow the whole time and, you know.
Yeah.
Boom, boom.
Yeah.
Did Paul can play that?
Yeah. He has a hard time.
He's my hero now.
Yeah. He's a great guitar player.
He is.
Hey, you've been using one of the English Electronics pedals.
I have.
Still using it?
Were
you using the fuzz?
Well, I'm not playing guitar right now,
right.
So no. But I've used it a lot, and I love it. It's great. Yeah.
So your record comes out on July 7th, which is today, the day that this podcast comes out.
Oh.
And you're gonna start doing some release stuff after the Patty tour?
They, I reposted it, but they moved the release date.
Oh.
You know how records always used to come out on Tuesdays?
Yes.
I don't know why, but now they come out on Fridays. So it's coming
really?
Out. Yeah, I don't know why either. But it's July 10th now.
Okay, July 10th.
Yeah.
So it comes out this coming Friday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
However, it is available at, you know, Waterloo now. Okay. It's like an advanced thing, and I'm from here, so.
So if you're in Austin, you can go down to Waterloo Records and pick up your Billy Harvey Dear Danger.
And I got a listening station so people could check it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's exciting. Yeah, I'm doing an in-store at the end of the month, 31st. And
oh, that's great.
It'll be my first in-store in my whole life.
You've never done one?
Nope.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'm stoked.
So you really, you're really putting a lot into it.
I'm trying harder than I ever have. Before, I used to make records and go, they'll find it. I don't care. They'll find it. And no one did. They didn't find it. But now I'm like, I want to help them find it. I think this record deserves to be heard. I wasn't trying to sabotage myself before. It's just the place I was at. And now I just want to know that I'm doing all I can do. You know, doing it on my own, it's hard and it seems impossible.
I bet also having like the Kickstarter, just having someone to answer to in a way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Now that I've fulfilled all the reward points.
You have?
They can suck it. No, I'm just kidding. But for a while, no, I was like, yeah. Especially because, you know, I did my, I'm sure a lot of people who have run a Kickstarter can relate to this, but you know, you're projecting. And say, I'm trying to raise money for this record. It's going to be released. You know, you'll have it in May. And I didn't realize that it was going to be in May a year later.
So
it was a year later. So for that year, every now and then somebody would be like, yo, what's up? I gave you money. And generally people were really cool, but actually wholly they were cool. Some people reached out to me a few times and were like, you know, I'm still waiting, hope you're, you know, wishing you the best. And
that's good.
But that was, you know, it was weighing on my conscience. Like I want to make a good record. I want it to be right. I want them to be happy. And I think, you know, I don't know. I think that was achieved. So we'll see. But and then fulfilling all those reward points.
What did you do for rewards?
I researched Kickstarter and I did a lot of the things that work for the model. I don't know if I did anything that was original, except that I had stuff to offer, like the poetry book that I wrote. Right. At one reward point you got the signed book or the
right.
You know, I did handwritten lyric sheets for people, or I did actually there's two I haven't done yet. Where I sing any song, I videotape myself singing any song you want and send it to you. I don't know, but that's weird, but whatever. And then I did 15 minute or more FaceTimes with people. Whoever wanted to pay to talk to me for 15 minutes, and a few people did, and that was actually really fun. I was like, fun. What have I done? I'm going to be like talking to a creep. I don't know. This was before I pressed activate on that one. And everyone, you know, it was just great. And, you know, I did the house concert, and my mom made these keychains. That was pretty fun. Like, she made these keychains with my face on them that are the cheesiest. Only a mom can make them.
Oh, my God.
And because she made them and they're so bad. Sorry, Mom.
They're hilarious.
I love you. But but I love them, and a lot of people do. Like, even a buddy of mine, you know Joe Reyes?
Uh-huh, yeah,
like,
I love Joe Reyes.
He's had that on his keychain for, till it, the metal wore out, and it fell off. But he's
that
like,
is
I can
awesome.
I can have this on my keychain because it's so kitschy, you know?
Yeah.
So there's, you know, there was a couple little things like that that made it fun for people. And but that's a big endeavor, you know, fulfilling those rewards, and it's the whole thing's I was in the studio recently, and a guy came in who I knew, and he's like, yeah, did you hear? I go, congratulations. And he goes, oh, because we're engaged? And I go, no, because you finished your record. I'm like, getting married's easy, making records is hard.
Yeah.
Anyone can get married.
Yeah. Well, now anyone can.
Yeah,
so there you go.
Right on.
Yeah, yeah. But gay people are not allowed to make records. That's a joke.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Scissor Sisters.
This time.
Scissor Sisters.
You wrote something on Twitter that I just read a little while ago, that it's when people say something, they're just on Twitter, it's not.
I forget.
Let's read your tweet. Let's read this tweet. Because you said they're just saying stuff about something. No, yeah, news is, yeah, no news. That was your thing. The hashtag was
hashtag no news is no news.
It's funny how serious, man. This, you know,
last
week, people went nuts, man. I mean, I'm, you know, my family, like my dad, I was like, that side of my family is like fucking conservative.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they're upset.
Yeah.
And I don't understand what threat is that to you, your marriage. The weird thing is that he said, look, you don't understand, this is a threat to the sanctity of marriage and to the sanctity of my marriage. And I don't say this stuff, but I want to say, like, dude, you've been divorced twice. Like,
right.
Two women getting married is more offensive than you getting divorced twice. Like,
right.
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's
weird.
It's very, and it's really sensitive.
It's weird. Yeah.
I just don't understand what it's taking away from anyone. Like, if they get married, like, what in the world are you losing by that?
It probably does something to somebody's belief system that that's like their house of cards, and it's like the guy on the corner with the perimeter. He's like, you know, the dogs aren't going to hurt your corner house, but keep them away from it by all means, you know. But
It's fear.
Yeah. And you know, we all have fear. You know, I'm scared most of the time. but you know,
do you feel guilty? Guilty a lot all of the time.
I feel guilty all the time. That song is, you know, most of this record is a. I mean, somebody said that it was very personal, and I didn't set out for it to be, but I guess it is, you know. And I had a realization. I was making a record for somebody a few years ago, and I might have said this last year, so I'll keep it short. But I realized that as I was driving to the studio that when I walk into a room, I feel guilty automatically.
Yeah,
I feel like I shouldn't be there.
Yeah,
and that was powerful because it you know, becoming aware of something like that helps you, you know, get rid of it. But so that song for me is true, and it's still true, unfortunately, you know. But I'm better. But you know, it just is what it is.
I don't know what it is with me, but I've noticed that, like, I don't like drink. I don't even really think of drinking, but in a social situation, man, it's like, I think because I feel so out of place a lot of people feel that way.
Yeah.
It's hard to get out of your head.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we all have these things that happen to us as we grow up, I don't know. It's like a life is, we're a piece of string. We get tied in a knot. You spend your, and then you die, hopefully a piece of string again.
Right.
You have to undo the knot.
Spend your life undoing the knot.
Yeah. And that's cool. That's evolution. And then we go on and do the next thing. So, but you know, I'm trying to untie the knot, and it's not just the guilt, that there's all the other stuff that you have, you know. I noticed I had a lot of anger too. And it's not anger that, like, I don't have a rage. It's not a rage anger. It's not like I don't lash out. Mm-hmm. It's internal. It's mostly just hurts me, and because I haven't let it out because I wasn't aware of it.
Like brooding.
Just,
is that what that is?
You know, just like having people. It's a lot of it stems from childhood stuff, and it would be like, you know, somebody committing suicide or something like that. Not to get too, what, you know, personal, I'm going to keep it as vague, but things like that, that embed things, there's like an injustice there, and you can, I stored up this anger, and then more and more stuff happens, and it just stays there, and just becomes like this core, and I became aware of that a few years ago, and somebody, like, I've, like, astrology, I've observed it for a bunch of years, and this astrologer that I go to, she was like, you know, you have a lot of anger toward men. And I was like, whoa. And then it should be there. And then I was like, okay. She goes, but you'll work through it, and in a couple of years you'll be on to the next thing. You know, you'll move past it. So I was like, how do I work through that? Like, what do I do? You know, go to counseling, sure, maybe. Punch the lawn so I don't hurt my hand. Like, physically get it out.
Right.
Scream. Go to acupuncture, you know. Go to Bikram yoga. Go to yoga and so you can feel better than everyone else. No, I like yoga, just not every single person that does it. No. I'm fine with all them too. But
just regular people saying namaste is weird.
Namaste. Namaste. I need to get back into yoga, actually, get some of this anger out.
Sweat it out.
Yeah.
Well, so what did they say? So what did you do? Did you go to counseling, or how did you work it out?
Well, I didn't do counseling. I talk openly to some close people in my life. So it's a form of, you know, counseling.
Sure, of course.
I'm I try not to deceive myself, because the you know, most of the lying we do is to ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, and I, you know, I try not to as much as possible. So that helps. And I did everything. I just, you know, I went to the gym. I screamed, and I'm not saying it's out of me or I'm evolved. I'm just like, I did one more little thing, you know. I did, you know. Yeah. So.
Well, you know, it's weird because like listening to this record and a lot of times, sometimes your music is really sad.
Yeah. Right.
It's very, very sad. Sometimes it's so sad that it fucks with me.
Yeah.
And I think that I feel like this, and I don't, I hope I'm not making it like you feel weird, but I've always felt like there's a connection, and there's other people, and there's this thing that like when something earth shattering happens to you in a formative time of your life,
yeah,
there is a lot of shit,
yeah,
that you continue to work through for your whole life, you know? Like, yeah. I feel like I've spent the last, like, 15 years trying to work my anger into something,
yeah,
that doesn't hurt other people,
right?
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I watched
a drum case at Bill Loeffler because he slowed down a song. Like, just weird. Like, who? I would never do that.
Yeah.
But I would.
Yeah.
Because I was... you have this anger that's as angry as you can possibly be, that you can access at any moment. So like a guy slowing down a drum beat is like,
right,
you treat him like the guy that killed your mom or something. You
right
know what I mean? Like, yeah, that is definitely like, you got to learn what level of anger you can get to at any, like, you can't always, you know,
right,
you can't always be Mount St. Helens, you know?
Yeah, it's. I mean, I felt...
not healthy.
I felt like I've contained... remember, did you used to play that softball game?
No, I never did. Einar did, though.
Yeah, well, we didn't like you as much, but no. yeah, I remember playing that softball game, and I remember Carl Anderson, he's so good at it, you know, and I think Einar was pretty good, too, but I never really played that. I did, when I was in school, I did like the odd sports, like gymnastics,
right,
and
right,
wrestling and stuff. Not the, you know, but, so I went and played softball with them, and I could really knock that ball. And it was, I think it was like, because I've stored all this energy, and when that ball came, I just like, you know, I would hit it. And, Carl commented on, you know, about that one time, and I just remember like, yeah, that is weird that I can really knock that ball. But I felt like when you hold it so long, you don't want to let even a speck out because you're just going to blow into a million pieces.
Yeah.
So part of it is like, you know, I'm just like containing myself all the time.
Right.
And that inhibits creativity. It inhibits relationships. And in the past bunch of years, even for the sake of art, I want to be more open, and I want to be able to love more. I want to be able to just be more open in my life so that I can fully experience life and not have this shell of protection. And so, you know, one of the things, my genuine desire in making this new record, I mean, it's just all in there. I mean, the title is a letter, Dear Danger, you know,
yeah,
comma.
Yeah.
I want to make an upbeat record. I want to make a record that's not about me, even though it is, it's more about us, you know?
Yeah.
It's more about everyone.
Yeah.
And I want it to be as lighthearted as I can be, you know. There's an eternal sadness.
Yeah.
I mean, we laugh a lot. But there's sadness, and that's just in there, you know. But I don't want to hear it prevail, you know, right now. So I was like, do I sound like I'm smiling when I'm singing? Because I don't want to be, you know.
Yeah, there is a lighter levity to this record that isn't on something like Grow Garden Grow, right?
Yeah. But I mean, but you know, I like all the emotions. Like, I don't want them all separated, because, you know, that's why most comedians are depressed and all the things that they are.
Yeah.
And without that, they wouldn't be funny.
Yeah.
So all these dark things are important, but not to be owned, you know, not to be dominated by them. You know,
not to go back to that, but that thing, like that, whatever black hole inside of you, when you go for so long and you're in your 30s, I think, is, I guess, when most people kind of start going like, all right,
right,
got to fix this, because you don't feel good. But a lot of times it's hard to get out, especially, I think, when you're a creative person, because you're like, you know what I mean? Like, what am I going to be without it?
Exactly.
When it may be a happy fucking songwriter, who wants that guy? Right. What am I going to be, Jack Johnson?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
And so sometimes it's hard to get, you don't realize that you'll hang on to it just so you can keep your edge, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. That's something that I examine. You know, one thing I've noticed is you don't get rid of it. You grow in, like, your energy grows. You're never going to get rid of the pain and the those things that people don't want to talk about that's inside of you. But you'll grow as a human. And that will diminish that. The size of that will be smaller because you get bigger.
Yeah.
And that's what happens. So there's always going to be something to draw from.
Right.
But I want to be bigger. You know, I want to grow to a point where, if you put them side by side, you know, I can have a quality of life that's a little more pleasant than the torture.
Yeah.
But the torture is there. I can access it. And
things are interesting, because I find myself like with Sandy's situation, you know, she just lost her brother 3 years ago, and it's so fresh. And I can remember when a loss like that was that fresh.
Yeah.
And it's hard to, you don't, like, it's hard to explain to someone how you learn to just live with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you're very sad, and, like, you don't think you'll ever be happy again, and then you feel guilty for being happy, and you feel guilty for having a good time. They're just things, you know?
Yeah.
And you'll be having a good time, and all of a sudden it hits you, and you feel bad for that stuff. And eventually that part of it goes away. Not, the loss never goes away. You just learn to live with it.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah, and the whole thing is, like, that, none of that shit makes sense. The thing that gets me, and it's well-intentioned people, but they're like, they want to say, what happened? Yeah. Like, nothing happened. It doesn't make sense. I can't explain it to you where you can go, oh yeah, point A and point B.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense in the universe.
Yeah.
And it never will, as far as I know, while I'm here with the information I have. The stuff doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
So you have to figure out a way to deal with something that there's really no answer for.
Yeah.
And that's why a lot of people turn to religion and spirituality, but, you know, but then that stuff can ensnare you too.
Yeah.
With, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's,
I always like talking to you. I feel like we should call Sims though, and we should both be paid for this.
Probably. or enroll.
Enroll.
Yeah.
I that's been an interesting thing to see. It's grown, and now there's, like, people I don't even know that are involved in it. Like, all the people that run it, I just don't even, it's not Don Harvey anymore, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, Don, I'm crazy. All right, get you in. You know what I mean? So you're gonna do some shows for this for Dear Danger?
Yeah. I have a show at Strange Brew on the 31st. It's Friday.
Mm-hmm. And that's the
day
of the in-store.
Yep. And I'm going to be on KUT. Jody Denberg's going to interview me that morning. So that'll be, I'm super excited about that. I think the previous, the morning of the 30th, I'm going on with Dudley and Bob.
Nice.
Who are a lot of fun. And then on the 28th, I'm going to be on Local Licks Live with Loris Lowe and trying. And
you're on the 28th? I think I'm on the week after.
Oh.
Yeah. Of the Loris Lowe.
Oh, so I won't see you.
No, you won't see me.
I won't, unless you, yeah. Come early.
I'll come a week early. It'll be no problem. So that's great. Are you going to do some, when you do these shows, are you, you're playing full band?
I'm going to, I want them to be special. And so yes, whatever full band means, I'm not sure yet, but it's going to be, so far I think it's going to be Donnie Wynn and Joe Reyes is going to play. And
yeah.
And I'm going to try to cook up some other stuff. But
you and Donnie have a really special thing when you play together. There's something great. I mean, there's something great that happens when he plays.
Yeah.
But like when you guys, there's something very special about the two of you playing together.
Thank you. I feel the same way. It's and I want to do a record. I plan to. It's been in my mind for a long time, but I want to do a record with he and I, a live record.
Good.
And it's great. You know, it's put very simply, it's a conversation with him. It's a full on conversation. And that's, I think, what makes it fun. You just see two guys who love each other, just like us right now, just talking. Yeah. Only you can't see us. You should.
Yeah, you don't want to see this.
Yeah, you don't want.
We can't.
You don't
want to see this. I can't even see this microphone.
Right.
So, and New York is an expensive place.
Oh God,
a lot of
yeah.
tall buildings. You know what happens to me though is LA did me in.
Yeah.
When I was there, it was too weird for me.
I just lived in LA and now I'm living in New York, and there's a lot of there's a rivalry, a healthy rivalry, mm-hmm. and an unhealthy rivalry, and you love to compare them, and they're comparable because of, you know, that they're such epicenters to, you know, at least entertainment.
Yeah.
I'm experiencing both, and you know, in LA there's traffic. Like you can drive. If you're not well situated, there's traffic, and the people from LA talk about the traffic.
Yeah.
But the people from New York talk about the subway, and you know,
that's
go.
True.
You know, are you in the city? Are you in Jersey? Are you,
right.
you know, what train are you taking?
Yeah.
So they don't, I haven't heard it acknowledged a lot, but it's very similar.
Yeah.
And, you know, if it takes you an hour to get somewhere in your car, everywhere I go in New York, it takes me 45 minutes on one or two trains and walking 15 minutes to the subway in the rain. And, you know, there's some similarities to the things that they think make them different.
Yeah.
They're kind of the same to me. A buddy of mine said that you got to be rich to be poor in New York. And unfortunately, that's true.
It's true.
It's a great city. The people are awesome.
Yeah.
You know, it is more of a melting pot than LA is.
Right.
That's the biggest difference that I see. And the buildings, and it's hard.
What about
your
work? Are you? I mean, do you have any records on deck to produce after this Patty Griffin tour and stuff? Or
I've been. I started working with this guy Luke Wade, who he's from Fort Worth. He's put out a few records. He's an incredible singer and songwriter, and he got on. He was on The Voice. Last season,
uh-huh.
he got to number five.
Wow.
Like he was on Pharrell's team or whatever. He's just really incredible. And I don't watch that show anymore because it kind of got like so full of itself that it's like a circus. But I was a fan of it. I liked the mentoring and it was entertaining, and I like seeing good singers, and the mentoring was like the different part that, you know, that I like to see.
Yeah.
But so I watched it. I did a gig in LA. It was my last gig with the Forest Rangers band that I was playing with out there, and it was our last gig, so it was kind of star-studded in the audience.
Yeah.
And I noticed Luke Wade in the audience, and I was like, wow, that's that dude from The Voice that I like. And after we played, he beelined it to me, and he goes, "You're Billy Harvey." I'm like, "You're Luke Wade."
That is awesome.
He goes, "Yeah, I'm a fan of your work, and you know, now we're here. We've done a few tracks, and pretty proud of them. And who knows where it'll go from here if it's a whole record? But I have worked with that, you know, and I did it in Austin.
That's great.
Here, Austin is, you know, it's still feels like my home and my base, and you know, it's easy. It's easier for me because of, you know, 15 years living here and the relationships I have to feel creative and empowered in this place. And I've made some decent friends in New York, but I don't feel like I have access to a studio, for one, that I could afford.
Yeah.
And or players, although I think I'm getting there pretty quick. I mean, there's certainly great studios and players there.
So. Yeah. Is McNair back up there, or is he still in Houston?
Dave is...
where is he?
I think he's maybe in between Houston and North Carolina.
Oh, okay. Wow.
I'm not totally sure, but I think I talked... He mastered my record.
Yeah, I saw that.
He did a... I think he did a incredible job mastering that record. And...
I love seeing Jim Valentine's record name on records, because I remember I met him first. He was just the assistant guy.
Yeah, Valentine.
Now he's the shit.
He is a badass.
Yeah,
he is a badass. He got this. He has this EMI console for Gear Geeks.
Right.
And that's like the console they had at Abbey Road, and he's got, it's a beautiful, pristine, vintage EMI console. And, you know, Jim's got skills that stand on their own, but he also now has this really cool console. And when I was figuring out how I wanted to actually finish this record and have it mixed, and a console was a consideration. Another thing I wanted to do with this record is I wanted it all done through a console and with people, old school,
right?
Committing,
yeah,
doing it. And so Jim mixed it through his EMI, and for better or worse, it was scary because you have to commit. And like, I can hear every song and go, I wish this was a little this way or that way,
but
I employ that 80% rule. Like, once it's past 80%, I can let go of those things,
yeah,
you know, that people who just listen to the song and don't nitpick are going to enjoy it. And we got the benefit of the console and working that fast. And
you know what's weird about nitpicking and sound and stuff, it's like how to describe it. I mean, I think that Oasis album, the second one, where they were obviously on tons of coke, and the one with Wonderwall and stuff, and like, that record sounds like there's some like somebody was not watching the EQ and stuff on some of that album, where you're just like, Jesus Christ. But still one of my favorite albums. I wouldn't take it, you know what I mean?
Yeah. There's
something funny about that.
There's something magical about recording and trying to capture truth. Trying to capture a human's essence, a human's effort, and capture the conversation between musicians, and then all the decisions that have to be made, and some of them are important and some of them aren't, and you have to distill it down to, are you enjoying yourself?
Yeah.
Is your head or your knee moving?
Yeah.
I learned something in the making of the, in the mixing, especially when I was listening to playbacks. Like, for one, if it's good, you're going, okay, I'm going to listen down to see if something's too loud or too quiet.
Right.
And then right when it starts playing, you're like, oh, wait, rewind it because I forgot what I was supposed to be doing.
Right.
That's a good sign.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, if I'm listening to playbacks and my head's bopping and then I notice that it stops, even though it was unconsciously, there's an issue at that point.
Wow.
It engaged my mind. And my mind was trying to figure out what was going on.
Right. And as opposed to just feeling it.
Just your body and your heart or whatever. Yeah. And I notice now when I'm listening to mixes, if I'm doing this right away, I can let go of any like technical thing that I, you know, try to enforce upon the thing.
Yeah.
I was actually listening to one mix with our mutual friend George Reef at his house, and I noticed I stopped moving and I looked at him and he did too.
Oh,
and
wow.
That's why I was like, wow, that's what's happening.
Man, you really come across something. I've never heard anyone say that.
I haven't either. I feel like it's never been said before, but I was like, wow, that's it.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, man, I just like started thinking. I was
stopped
like, oh.
Feeling it. Yeah.
So, yeah. So, yeah. I mean, not to let that. It's like going, you don't want to make people self-conscious of how they enjoy stuff.
Yeah.
Because then they're third-personing themselves, you know. But, I'm scared to say that too often because I don't want people to think about how they listen to music. But it hasn't prevented me from enjoying it.
That's
so
good.
I think it's probably all right.
Do you you have guys you bounce stuff off of? I know that I remember one time, I can't remember what it was, but it was when you were doing Pi and Bob was like, if I will pay for this song to be remixed. Do you remember that? Is that something that actually happened, or did I overhear a conversation because I was hanging out with you guys around that time, or were you saying? I can't remember, but is he's a good sounding board like that?
He
for you?
I don't use him as much as a sounding board. It's not. I didn't use him as one. We were just in, you know,
close quarters.
We had more communication.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Although we still communicate weekly for sure. He's definitely a good person to bounce stuff off
he's
of.
Real honest.
If you,
yeah.
But I've noticed, you know, I have my confidants, and I send them stuff because I know how they hear things, and the trust has been built over the years. But nobody trumps how I feel. If I know what I want, I'm not going to.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to be swayed.
Yeah.
But I can gain information from them, and sometimes some of my close friends don't really get or like one of my records. And that's, if I like it, then that's on them. You know, that's fine. So I can't be, you know, so that's just how it is. So I have like, when I need it, when I'm looking for some perspective,
yeah,
I have a few people who I know. One person listens to lyrics, one person listens to quality,
right.
One person listens, doesn't listen to anything, just feels right.
Yeah.
Like, were you having fun?
Yeah.
If there's any hesitation, I'm like, okay, it sucks.
Yeah.
You know, not like that. But my whole thing was a mantra that I've kind of adopted during this record is good is failure. I know that's kind of harsh, but with so many records being made and so much music and entertainment, just it's a barrage.
Yeah.
Everyone's good. And if you play somebody something, and that doesn't mean that I achieve that or that every song is that way. But for me, I was like, if one of my confidants is like, yeah, that's good. I'm like, nope.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not enough. If the reply is not this is awesome or fucking great or oh man, you know, wow.
Yeah.
You know, I like it. What do you mean? Is there an exclamation point?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
I like it, period. No, yeah. Not good enough.
Yeah, no way.
So you know, it's just kind of, it was kind of a personal thing to challenge myself to raise the bar.
Well, you
always want to push yourself. So.
Yeah. Well, you really took the challenge and took it even further, because this is really just an absolutely gorgeous record.
Thank you.
Yeah. Dear Danger, you are not the one. Just so you know.
Yeah.
Is there anything that I'm missing? Anything you want to tell the people?
I had my website updated. I know people don't go to
website. BillyHarvey.com.
Yeah.
Yep. I've got that. People can follow you on Facebook and Twitter.
Instagram. I'm trying to be better with all the social media.
You know,
media.
I had a meeting with someone last week about
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
And they hit me to some stuff that I'm doing. And I looked at my insights today on your, you know,
uh-huh.
in your, if you guys, if anyone out there listening is in a band and you've got a Facebook page that's a band page or something, you get insights as to, you know, what your numbers are,
uh-huh.
people coming, people commenting and all that stuff. And all my stuff is up like 316%.
Wow.
Because of the advice that girl gave me.
Can you get it any higher?
I'm so glad I haven't been talking to my dad lately, but this is I needed something. 316%.
Yeah, I mean, what about 400? Let's.
Thank you. I'm glad to see you.
Me too. Bro.
I'm so proud of your album and proud of you for making this album.
Thank
you. I'm, you know, no matter how long it took, you did it.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. It feels great.
Yeah.
It feels really good.
People hear some of the songs on here. Is there a focus track you're using as a quote-unquote single? Are you going to make a crazy video?
I started making a video, okay, and good. It is crazy.
Good.
It's incredible.
Good.
When you'll see it, I don't know.
Okay.
But I don't know about a focus track.
It's weird, right?
What do you think? I mean, if I have to pick, I can't. I wish there was a clear...
I could listen to it again.
People, I would say, I'm going to say maybe Make the Pain Last, All for You, and Dear Danger, you know, but then I thought it would be Party House or We Are Giants, but, you know, based on feedback, people kind of like, there's only like a couple that people don't mention, but people are kind of mentioning all the songs. So that's a good thing.
Yeah.
You know. Crossing the Desert is awesome, but it's kind of epic for like a focus track, you know.
Yeah.
Here, listen to this for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But
it's still a great way to open the album, and it really puts you in a...
Yeah.
In a space.
It was the only option for me. I like the sequencing's hard, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know that it's perfect, but it feels pretty good.
Yeah,
you know?
It does feel good.
It feels like a story told.
Yeah.
I'm into it.
I think so. I was listening to it in order, what you sent me in that Dropbox. Was that in the...
Probably.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I numbered them just so that they would go into order if you burnt.
So I have to tell you the overwhelming thing outside of the fact that the album's gorgeous and I was really proud of you today when I was listening to it when I was running.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is a compliment, but when I was listening to it, I just kept on thinking like, man, you got to get your shit together. You got to get your shit together. You got to get in and fucking write some songs. Get your shit together. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. This guy's doing it. He's not lazy.
Yeah. That's good. That's good. I had another friend say, damn you. Yeah. I'm like, all right, cool.
Yeah.
I love and support my friends and I want to see them succeed. So there's a healthy, like, let's push each other.
Yeah.
I've had that with Bob forever. I mean, Bob... Yeah. That's, you know, Bob's great at that. He pushes everybody.
Yeah, he wants everyone to be the best.
Keep
they
writing,
can be.
Keep,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
don't settle. Keep writing, keep doing it, keep making records. And that's, if it's what you do, if it's what you love to do, do it.
Yeah.
Easier said.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Well, man, I wish you a lot of luck with it. Have fun on
Thank
tour
you.
With Patty and Craig. I haven't seen Craig in a long time.
Yeah.
I did, about a month ago, listen to all of Dead Spy Report
again. Yeah.
Was there a second album that never came out of his? Or did it come out?
It did.
Can you find it?
I have it. I feel like it came out.
Okay.
It's great. And, I mean, I listened to Dead Spy Report 100 times for sure.
Yeah.
I'll come, maybe... I have to ask Craig, but maybe, because Craig and I have a band, and we have a record almost done.
No way.
Yeah.
What is that?
I can't say yet, but it's awesome. It's incredible.
I can only, dude, that just made the hair on my arms stand up.
Yeah.
I fucking, I want to hear that.
Yeah, we have 8 songs done, and we might even just make it an 8-song record just because it feels right. But I wanted to get this thing, this obsession out first, and then I can't wait for people to hear.
It's available Friday, July 10th, Dear Danger.
Yes.
Written, recorded, and performed by Billy Harvey, along with some other fellows, including Jim Valentine, working on the thing, Dave McNair mastering. Got some Donnie Wynn on here? No?
Lars Goransson, George Reef, Salim Nirala, Joe Reyes.
I love Joe Reyes, man.
Yeah, he's
great. I love Salim, man. That guy, I've kind of gotten to know him, I guess from knowing you, in a weird way.
Yeah.
I reached out to him because I knew you and I knew you guys were friends, and I love what he does.
Yeah.
He's a great songwriter, great musician.
Yeah. He co-produced a couple tracks on there with me. We were touring around, and you know, he's just like, help me with mine, I'll help you with yours. And so he was just, he's a champion of people, too. He wants everyone to do what they say they love doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's cool.
I got to do what I say I love doing. And then once again, having you over to interview, it's just me. It's all about me in some way at the end of the whole thing. Well, Billy came by. How was the interview? I got to get my shit together. Thanks for coming by, man.
Man,
I love you.
Love
fun.
I'm shorter, a Ferris wheel transporter through time.
Oh, yeah. Another great conversation with my dear friend Billy Harvey. I love that dude so much. His record, Dear Danger, which is my favorite record of the year so far. A gorgeous, gorgeous record. You've heard a little bit of a song. You're about to hear a whole song in a minute. But it is available everywhere this Friday, July 10th, 2015. But if you live in Austin, which I know a lot of you do, you can run down to Waterloo Records and pick it up right now. In fact, it's in a listening station. You can listen to it and check it out before you hear it. Also, Billy is doing an in-store and a record release show on July 31st. He's doing the in-store at Waterloo Records, and he's doing his record release at Strange Brew, a great place. Strange Brew Lounge Side. Big support of the show. All right, I love Billy. Get out there, get his record, and get out there and support him. I hope he has a great tour with Patty Griffin. And while you're out there looking up Billy Harvey stuff, don't forget that you can like our Facebook page. Please do. We keep it up. There'll be photos of all kinds of stuff up there that you would like to see, maybe some updates, some stuff about me, some stuff about guests, all kinds of stuff. So get on out there and do that. Don't forget, you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes and also on Stitcher. And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Johnny Gowdy, all right? Everybody get out there and get this Dear Danger record by Billy Harvey. It is amazing. I absolutely love it. My favorite record of the year so far. All right, here's some more music from Billy Harvey from his record, Dear Danger. Don't forget to get out there and get it. It's available this Friday everywhere, July 10th, 2015. All right? Have a great week. Let's get down.
In a party house, my parents like to keep it loud. No rest for the wicked, no sleep for the kids. The neighbors in the kitchen getting high like they did. I grew up moving town to town. New schools, old clothes, no friends around. Just me and my sister, two wild-eyed kids, and the neighbors in the kitchen getting high like they did. I grew up on a Ray Charles record. I grew up with the Oak Ridge Boys. I grew up on some early Van Halen. My mother showed me how to make some noise. Faster than you should. My sister did fast as she could. The party don't stop till the party does. Don't be left behind wishing for what was. I grew up in a party house. The cops would come and shut it down.
open all the windows, get rid of the weed. My buddy's on the front lawn, pretending to leave. I grew up on a Ray Charles record. I grew up with the Oak Ridge Boys. I grew up with the young Bob Seger. My mother showed me how to make some noise. Let's make some noise.
Come on.
Let's make some noise.
Come on.
Make some noise. Thank the Clash. And if you don't tell my mom I got into a stash, I'll tell you all the things that I saw one night. You wouldn't believe me, but the neighbors might. You can keep the car, I got my guitar. And I got these dreams, say I'm gonna go far. I don't know how far, far we'll be, but I know when I get there, I will find me. Some noise.